We will be getting, somehow, we will be getting podcast analytics back from how people play our podcast. So you'll know when they dip out and when they listen to stuff and how many people are actually listening.
Uh-oh. So you better listen all the way through to the end.
Yeah.
And by the way, you should, because sometimes there's something at the end.
We put teasers in. And they're not always like things that get said in the podcast. Sometimes it's stuff that gets recorded externally from that.
That is factually correct.
Welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 276, and I'm your host, Matt.
I'm Scott.
And I am Ash.
I feel like I've said this three times already.
don't tell them how the sauce is
Who
made.
Who cares? We don't make sauce. We just put a bunch of shit in the pot. I make the sauce.
Maybe what we make is more of like a nacho cheese that you get from the pump.
Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah.
You know, like, or it comes in the bucket. You get the bucket of nacho cheese.
Didn't I just send you that news story about the poor woman that died from eating the nacho cheese?
What?
She made a Dorito pie.
She made a Dorito pie and she died.
You mean Frito pie or she made Dorito?
No, she used Doritos.
Oh well, that's the problem.
That's what I told Ash.
What kind of crazy person uses Dorito? You make Frito pie, not Dorito pie. Jeez.
Either way, it was a poor life decision. She ended up... yeah. Her stomach like exploded and that was it.
Oh, boy. Well, anyways, on this episode, it's been a while since we've all been on the podcast at the same time. So, true. We've all done some things. We'll talk about that in a second. But this is going to be our Con Talk episode. Matt went to WWDC this past week, so we'll hear about that. And we are in the throes of E3 currently, but all the pressers have transpired, so we'll talk about some of that stuff as well, and that'll be most of our episode. So and then we have a question of the week, which is not in the show notes, but I think it has something to do with what makes what was the best thing you saw at E3.
Who prepped this episode? Jesus.
Is that
correct? Sorry, guys.
Yeah,
that was it. That was right.
Okay. I mean, maybe what I should do from now on is just look at the responses to the question of the week and try to infer what the question was to begin with. So
276 episodes and we still can't get show notes right.
Like a Jeopardy show notes. You name the question based off the answers.
Yeah, but maybe we don't need them. That's what I'm trying to say.
That's true.
We've got this. So, let's start with Matt.
Hey.
Because, I want to hear what you've been up to.
I am feeling much like you guys feel every day because I'm on about 3 hours of sleep and jet lag at the moment. So I'm feeling great. But I went to BookCon a couple weeks ago, right? Yeah, week and a half ago. I went to BookCon here in New York and got to meet up with our friend Marissa Meyer for a minute and also go to some panels and kind of walk around and shop on the floor. And really all I wanted to say is that, and I mentioned this to you guys in Slack, and I think I even tweeted about it because it was ridiculous, but it was the cleanest, calmest, most like patient con I've ever been to in my entire life. It was, I will use the word overrun with women. It was mostly a female heavy con. Not that there weren't men there, but there just were a lot of women there. But because they obviously are more literate and read than we do, it was the only thing I gathered from that.
That's kind of what I'm getting out of this.
It's probably accurate.
But it was just so nice. Like everybody was so nice. The craziest thing I saw. We go to a lot of conventions, and it is generally terrible. And people are mean, are nice to each other sometimes. But there's also a lot of just like cranky, tired people. Just barely making it through the con. And at this one, like we were waiting for this panel. And it was like in an open space kind of, but there was seating and there was a panel currently going on. And instead of people moving in and like sitting in the empty seats, they like self-formed and self-managed a line outside of this panel and just stood there waiting for the first panel to finish before they entered and sat for the one that they were actually there for. And like no one was working at the con was there. Like no one was like, okay, stand here in line, wait for this. It just like happened. It was just weird. Beautiful. It was very weird. It was very nice to see. And everybody was super nice to each other. I saw people like helping each other left and right and telling people where to go and how to find things. And it was just, I think it's a Reed Pop convention, if I remember correctly. And I imagine it's probably the lightest one that they have to deal with year in and year out. It's just probably like, oh, BookCon, put like three people on it and like one security guard and we'll be solid.
That sounds very pleasant.
So it was really nice.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was cool. And then I've been traveling a bunch. Melissa and I were in San Francisco this weekend after I was at WWDC. She came up and she had never been, so we went to San Francisco and kind of did touristy stuff. Walked the Golden Gate Bridge and took a ferry into the Fisherman's Wharf and went into Chinatown and Haight-Ashbury and all that kind of stuff. And the best part about it was like San Francisco's a weird city. I think I've talked about it before being weird, but and you've been Ash, right? A bunch.
Yeah.
It's a weird, it is weird. City where like it's sort of bigger land-wise. It's not LA size by any means. It's much smaller in LA, but it's a little bit bigger. Like it's not super walkable and the transit's kind of like hit or miss. BART kind of like goes only in a couple of areas in the city and then there's buses you can try to catch otherwise. But it's like just spread out enough that it's hard to get around, but all of the nice hotels are all in the worst part of the city, which is like directly next to an area called the Tenderloin. And it's in like the shopping district. So it'd be like the equivalent of being in like Times Square and where all of the homeless are. So like Melissa got there and she was like, I hate this. I hate everything about this right now. Like it was, just like tourists bumping into you. It's just a gross, like overcrowded area. And then, like, the next day we left and we went out to Golden Gate Bridge, which is up by the Presidio, which is a really beautiful area. And there's a giant park up there. And then we went to, like, around that area. And we went to Haight-Ashbury the next day. It's just such a gorgeous city, like, once you get outside of all of that. There's really kind of unique in the way it looks like. Well, how did I describe it? It's, like, super bright. Everything's really bright and painted different colors. And, like, it's just a very, like, I don't know. It's hard to describe, but the city has grown on me a little bit since I've been a few times.
Yeah, I spent a number of summers out there, and it really grew on me, especially when I was younger, and I spent a lot of time like skating and walking a lot of places, and it was super super fun and just so much good food too. So.
Oh God, the food is like food and the coffee are like two unbeatable things in that city. It's just ridiculously good. You can like kind of just wander into stuff. Like even bad bar food was like better than a lot of food elsewhere. So, but it was fun. We had a good time. I've been performing a bunch. We did the week before I left, I did, I think, 5 improv shows with like a team.
Wow.
We put together. And that
That's
was
awesome, man.
Crazy and really fun. I'm enjoying performing a lot. I miss it. Being on stage and doing stuff is, there's nothing like it. It's a different feeling. So, as you both know, I believe. And
it's been a while.
I have not gamed at all. I've been gaming literally zero. The first time I turned on my Xbox in almost 2 weeks, or maybe even longer, was today to watch Anthony Bourdain before I made dinner. So, I've not done anything.
We'll talk about enough games for you then.
Yeah, we will get into
talk about all the games
until I don't care about games anymore. So, Ash, how about you?
Been busy times doing not so fun stuff, but I will talk about the fun things. I went and saw Wonder Woman, which was as good as everyone has been saying. I kind of wish we could just like devote a whole episode to it because I really did enjoy it. My short review is that I feel like it does have the capacity to kind of save the DC cinematic universe. But it's going to kind of force them to go in a completely different direction than what they have been doing. So I'm hoping that things turn around. I think the reason I loved it so much is it felt like a Marvel movie.
Feel like a Captain America movie? Because all of the trailers, I kept saying it, man, they look like they're shooting like a Captain America style movie, like kind of.
Yeah, very much so. There's a lot of really, there's a lot of comedy in it that actually worked out pretty well. It was actually pretty funny. The acting is all really top notch and all, I think all the characters are likable. I you know, absolutely loved all the action sequences. I thought they were really, really well done. And Gal Gadot was just, she was spectacular as Wonder Woman.
Awesome.
So it was really great to see. And the music was just great. It's one of the first movies I've seen in quite a while that I walked away being like, oh, the soundtrack was just awesome.
Cool.
The score was just awesome.
That's cool.
So that was great.
We're
really
gonna,
loved Wonder Woman.
I think we're going to go see it this week. So
yeah, definitely see it, and see it in the loudest theater you can, because the score is just badass. Still playing Overwatch, believe it or not. You know, listeners have been listening for the past year know that I've been playing a lot. I still am playing. They just wrapped up their 1 year anniversary event today, where they were doing a double XP and all sorts of fun stuff. But it's been fun, man. Like, they're adding new stuff to the game all the time and still playing. I played like at 4 o'clock this morning because I couldn't sleep, and it was good.
Damn.
Still love it. It's, you know, couldn't sleep, so I played some Overwatch and ended up I said this on Twitter, but I did so well that people threatened to actually murder me. and my handle on Battle.net is Legs, and they said, we're gonna find where you live and break your legs. And another guy said, yeah, I'll get the buckets of ice ready to cut them off.
Wow.
So you gotta love the internet. Yeah.
That's what happens at 4 o'clock in the morning, huh?
Yeah, when you're playing really well. But I did, you know, I had like 4 golds with Winston, and like I had got like 32 kills in a match. I don't know what was going on with me, but I was literally just murdering everything. It was beautiful. So other than that, I've been watching Twin Peaks. I'm done with episode 6. I don't know what's going on. I'm completely clueless, but I'm still enjoying it. The pace has slowed down a bit. I'm really waiting for some major story beats to happen, and it appear to be like making me wait on purpose, which is driving me crazy because I've already waited about 25 years, so I don't want to wait anymore. But it's good. I'm still enjoying it. I'm glad it's on. So it's kind of weird to be like, oh, Sunday night, I'm going to watch Twin Peaks. That's freaking crazy to me. So
I'll Scott, talk to some people and get that fixed for you.
Yeah, fix the pacing. Please.
Fix it.
Scott, what have you been doing?
Let's see. Well, hello from Iowa, first of all.
Yeah, hi, man.
Yeah, hey, I am in Des Moines. Have you heard of this place? Yeah.
Is your hotel made of corn?
It's not. I think that's in South Dakota, the Corn Palace. Yeah. Which I have been to the Corn Palace, and that's a different place, and surprisingly not in Iowa, but there you have it.
Huh.
No, I am in Ames, Iowa at Iowa State University for a work thing.
Cool.
Yeah, the Iowa State University campus is really beautiful and really nice looking.
Tell me if I'm wrong, but I feel like in the Midwest or in some of the more, what's the right word? Like areas where there's not a lot around them, I guess, that the colleges kind of like have to be nice, right? Like
yes.
they sort of yes. have to provide for the students to have a life around the school, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm sure many people maybe outside of major cities are familiar with like this type of town that Ames is, but it's one of those like burbs outside of a major city, right? So
right.
like, you know, if you've ever driven outside of Rochester, or if you've ever driven outside of Atlanta, you know, where people live in the burbs, and there's just like this nice flat green grass everywhere and trees everywhere and like nice looking homes like among the trees. And that's kind of like the vibe here in Ames, Iowa, and especially on the campus too. The campus is not too crowded with buildings, and there's old buildings and some newer buildings, and all just kind of has like a really nice vibe to it so far. And it's not so big that it feels like soul crushing, like, you know, places where we may have gone to school. So so that's a thing that I'm doing. Fun stuff wise, I have played a couple of different games. I think we've established that I am an achievement hunter at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
I picked up a game called I picked up a game called Refunct, which came out, I think, in the last week or so. And it's one of those like quick indie titles that you can 100% in a few hours. I picked it up kind of sight unseen because I was like, okay, I can do that. But it turns out that it's just this really kind of short experience in the style of a Mirror's Edge game, where you have to kind of run and jump in a first-person perspective in order to get from point A to point B. But it's interesting in the sense where you start on a platform in the water, and it, you know, you run towards like a button, and once you reach the button, like other parts of the environment raise up out of the water, and you kind of need to see where you have to go next and then kind of maneuver your way to the next button on the map. And it's an interesting experience, and one that's like something you can master, like, you know, after like an hour or two of like running the level over and over again. And it's not a very long game, but I think it's only like $1, right? So that was, it was fun to play, and I was pleasantly surprised. Well, I did play some Overwatch, but I've also been kind of hammering away at Mass Effect Andromeda multiplayer, which is still really fun. This past weekend, in celebration of their EA Play event, they also did, EA held, they I can't remember what it was called exactly, but they ran a campaign that kind of emphasizes inclusivity in gaming. And so across a lot of their major franchises, they are running specialized events where I believe if you participated, EA would like make a donation to this like you know, initiative that they have. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that you could do was you could pick up Mass Effect Andromeda. They had a special bronze mission that you could run in one of the new maps, which is fantastic. It's a new map in a Remnant Vault where the map sort of unfolds as you play it, which is kind of like a first for Mass Effect multiplayer. So you move through like a couple of different sections of the map, and then during extraction you run all the way back to the start again, which is fun.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and if you completed that challenge over the weekend, you got this like special Apex box, which you can't buy normally, and it had a guaranteed ultra rare item as well as a gold item. But I ended up getting like 2 gold items in an ultra rare, so that was super cool too. So I got some new guns in Mass Effect Andromeda. And while I've been traveling, I started playing Fallout Shelter, which I remember I pooped on this game a little bit like when it first came out. And now it's on Windows 10 with achievements, and since I don't have like a great machine to play games on while I'm traveling.
Man, you'd play tic-tac-toe if there was fucking achievements.
Yeah, dude, I'm playing Microsoft Solitaire on my phone, guys. But yeah, I'm playing Fallout Shelter, and the first time around I didn't get it, and now I kind of get it. And I see why people enjoyed it at the time when it came out, because once you start questing, that's kind of like more interesting than just kind of doing the tiny tower thing.
You mean like once you start sending the people out to get stuff that you need and all that?
Yeah, but you can also, once you unlock the Overseer's Chamber, there are actual quests that you can send them on.
That's and a once new you, thing. Or newer new. Than when we were playing it, yeah.
Well, you send the Vault Dwellers out on quests, and once they reach those quests, you actually go to a location that's separate from your vault, and you kind of run through this little small building. You know, it might be like a series of like, you know, 10 to 20 rooms. You complete an objective, and then you send them back to your vault, and you go back to the vault too. So,
yeah, when we were playing, it was just like you'd send them out on a quest, and they'd basically live or die. And then come back.
Yeah, you can still do that too, where they go out and get like materials and caps and stuff like that. But it's kind of a expanded experience now, and so that's fun. So that's pretty much all I've been up to. Why don't we just take a quick break, and then we'll hear about WWDC.
Sounds good.
News.
Do you want to hear about Apple products and how magical they are?
I want to hear about Michelle Obama.
Yeah, so I left that off this show note list, but there was a surprise announcement at the keynote that so every year they bring in special like speakers to come and talk about whatever it might be, and like I got to see Dave Filoni talk once, I think 4 years ago or 3 years ago, before Rebels was going to start, and that was pretty cool. I've seen a few other kind of random people, but this year they were like, we have a really special guest tomorrow. It's going to be Michelle Obama. And it was at 9 a.m. So I got up the next morning. We went straight there, grabbed some coffee, went in. No real line or anything. It's WWDC is kind of run more like a convention you would be used to going to, Scott, like for professional convention kind of thing.
More like a conference than a convention.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I mean, I think it is a conference is really what it's called. But so they don't really like overbook. So they had the full auditorium was there for everybody to kind of get in, and holy cow, she is just like one of the most charismatic and inspiring people I have ever seen in my life. Like it was just, I want to say every person walked out of there going like, holy cow, I need to make better decisions about what I'm doing, what I'm building, like what needs to be focused on. And she had this whole thing. I actually thought they were going to record it because all of WWDC is recorded and put up later, but apparently this was requested to just be for the people attending and was not recorded. But
that's amazing. Like, if she were a multiplayer character, she just buffed everybody in the room.
It was incredible. Like, she had this whole message about, like, you know, it was the gist of it, and I'm not going to say it as eloquently as she did. It was that you know, if all you're doing is trying to make money, then your focus is in the wrong area, and you ultimately probably won't be super successful. That, like, if you're not in it for something bigger, like whatever that may be, then why are you doing it at all? Kind of thing. And she's a big proponent.
Good advice.
Yeah, she's a big proponent of young women and girls learning to get into the tech industry and get into you know, science industry, things like that. And she talked. There was a whole group of high school kids there that got to sit right in front, that were attending the whole conference, but were there for the speech in the front. And they shot video of them every once in a while. You could see them on the screen, and they were just like glowing, like just glued to everything she was saying. And it was really incredible. It really was like feasibly one of the highlights of my career, you know. So
that's awesome that you just got to be in the room and just listen to her.
Yeah,
I saw your pictures, and I was like, oh damn, that's insane.
It was nuts. It was really great.
I also couldn't imagine like being in a room with somebody that commands so much respect that everybody would just kind of be riveted.
It was just like, it was silence when there was supposed to be silence and laughing when she was in a room of 5,000 people and was commanding it like it was 10, you know. I mean, it was just, it was crazy. She was very, very, well thought out, like, you know, everything she said, but it felt, you know, where like Obama would be more slower paced to his speaking. He's very intentful with his words. You know, he everything he's saying has something that you can tell he's kind of thinking about.
Yes.
She is that, but at the same time feels like she's off the cuff. Like she's just hanging out and talking to you. Like it was really amazing to watch. She really was something special. So I'm really glad I got to see that.
Nice.
Now onto the stupid stuff that doesn't really matter compared to that.
Sorry, so, I didn't want you to bury the lead here. You know?
No, that's fine. We'll start off with what I think is the most important thing they announced, which is Apple is moving into AR, and they're moving into AR heavily.
I love AR.
So iOS 11 comes with, you know, and I won't get too techie. So the other thing is that, like, you know, while the press loves to be all over WWDC, it's really meant to be a developers conference. So stuff that they announce. They announce very flourishy in the morning on Monday, and then like they do deep dives all week long where you're learning like the technical aspects of how everything's working and how you're going to use it as a developer, you know? So it's really funny to watch the Kool-Aid get poured. And then like later that week, everybody's like, well, I don't really care about that feature that much, you know, whatever it might be.
Then it's like, who's going to the breakout session in the Pelican conference room?
But the thing that they said, the thing that I would key off of that I would point out was crazy was Tim Cook mentioned that basically the moment iOS 11 gets put out, which will be this fall, there will be something in the range of 30 million AR devices in the wild, like immediately, essentially.
Ah. So
when you think about it that way, and then when you also think about it, the other thing I was thinking is that, you know, my mom could end up downloading an AR game and playing it and will have no idea it's AR. Like, it will just be a game or an app that uses AR without her knowing that's what that is. You know what I mean? Like Apple is doing a thing that like no one has done yet or been able to pull off feasibly, which is, hey, we have a giant base. We can launch this thing. We can do it right. And then no one will even know it happened, and it will happen just kind of overnight. You know, like this Pokemon Go was like a toe in the water versus what really could take off with not just gaming, but integrated apps and all this other stuff that AR can kind of affect.
Yeah, that's cool.
And it looked really developer friendly. It looks amazing. The only caveat is I think it has to have like the A9 and the A10 chip, which I want to say is the iPhone 6S and above. Will be able to use AR right out of the gate. They also announced they refreshed all their hardware line, which we don't need to talk about. But the big one was they announced an iMac Pro, which is their 27-inch iMac that's basically loaded to the gills. This thing was, it's insane. You can spec it to be like probably what would be like a mid-tier gaming rig all the way up to like beating Windows machines at their own game, essentially. It'll be expensive as shit, don't get me wrong, but it is a beefy machine, and it's an iMac, so there's no base or anything like that. And then I want to say they said that it would be upgradable, at least RAM and maybe something else wise. I don't remember, but
so would this be like sort of on in the same market competition wise as like the, what is that called? The Surface Studio, like that device? Like,
yeah, this is that kind of, but aimed at, clearly aimed not just at artists, but also at, VR was the big announcement.
Oh,
there.
So oh, got
they're
it. Okay.
Be pairing, or they're going to be teaming with Steam and the HTC Vive for VR on the Mac, which is, basically the base model iMac Pro will be VR ready out of the box. And that was cool. their announcement there. They didn't really go too much further into it, which leads me to believe usually what happens at DubDub in the summer is that if they kind of surface level talk about something, it means in the fall they're going to announce like a slew of big partnerships and announcements. And then other maybe less important stuff, they announced a HomePod, which will come out in the fall, that I think is the stupidest thing I've ever seen in my life. Which is the speaker, the smart speaker that they did the dumbest thing. They announced that they're going to do a smart speaker, which is like a Google Home or an Alexa. And of course it's Apple, so it's going to be all high end and it's going to sound really great. And they're focusing on music or whatever, because that's their only in into this market, because Siri's not as as Google, and their integrations won't be as good as Alexa. And then my favorite part of the announcement was they went, what would you expect to pay for a internet connected speaker, which is just Sonos, is essentially what they're saying there. And they were like, they were like $399. And they're like, and then what would you expect to pay for a smart speaker? $200? And I was like, first of all, neither of those things cost that much money. Like, they're both cheaper than that. And then he's like, so you know, you could be paying upwards of $700 for these things. Well, we're going to come in at $350, which is crazy. That is, no one should spend $350 on a smart speaker. It's nuts, but whatever. Mm-hmm. It's that's how Apple operates. And then they announced the new iPad, which actually looked really nice, and a whole slew of new features when iOS 11 rolls out for the iPad, and it is clearly in response to everything Surface has been doing. So I find that interesting just on a tech level, that they must find the Surface to be an actual competitor, because otherwise they just wouldn't bother responding to some of that stuff. So, and then of note to us, you know, for a second, for us guys, they're opening up podcast analytics on iTunes, which is interesting. First time ever. So if you have a pod, if you listen to us and you also have your own podcast out there, pretty soon, as of iOS 11 and High Sierra, which is the next Mac OS, I believe, we will be getting podcast analytics back from how people play our podcast. So you'll know when they dip out and when they listen to stuff and how many people are actually listening.
Uh-oh. So you better listen all the way through to the end.
Yeah.
And by the way, you should, because sometimes there's something at the end.
We put teasers in, and they're not always like things that get said in the podcast. Sometimes it's stuff that gets recorded externally from that.
That is factually correct.
And then the last thing is they were like trying to make this big push into their new app store, and in the process they announced Monument Valley 2 as an exclusive to iTunes or iPhone, iOS, or whatever. And then that came out that day. I guess that's already available now as you're hearing this. But so that was their big game announcement. The game stuff was sort of a little light this year. You could tell they were kind of like trying to focus on AR and VR more heavily. Yeah. So that was pretty much the majority of the announcements. I don't think there was really anything else of value to us. But I think that AR thing is giant. I said it to you guys the moment it happened, and I think it's going to be humongous.
I'm very interested to see where they go with it and how they integrate it. So we'll see.
What's amazing with it is not that they are going to go anywhere with it. It's that it's open for developers. So like I, as an engineer, can already build an AR app right now for the iOS 11 that comes out in the fall. So I think it could be giant. That's all I'm saying. It seems this was a bigger shift than I've seen at any of their other announcements of recent note. And even a friend of mine who's not an Apple fanboy at all was like, holy shit. Like, he was like super into it too. So we will see. But it was very Apple in its nature, and otherwise the conference was fine and, you know, long, and I have stories I can't tell about coworkers and stuff. So
fair enough.
Good times had by me.
Good times.
Cool.
So we're here and we're going to be talking about E3, which is currently underway in Los Angeles. We are not there.
No.
Which is okay, because E3 can be watched from the comfort of your no pants at home. So that is what we are doing. And we're going to bring you our, I guess, assessment of some of the press conferences at E3 and some of the games that were announced and things that are happening there right now. So first of all, I guess I should start by saying I'm getting news through our Twitter feed that E3 is very, very, very crowded right now. And I don't know if that's because they are used to that convention being press and industry only. And now that it's open to the public, it's very crowded, or that it's being poorly managed. I don't know the reality, but I just know that from the pictures I've seen, it does look very, very, very crowded. So hopefully they figure out some
reality, man.
No, that's true. We don't. Not at all. The first press conference I want to talk about is Microsoft, because they did some really cool stuff this year. And the first thing that the biggest thing that Microsoft announced was the name of the Scorpio and really how much it's going to cost and what it's going to do. So the Scorpio is now the Xbox One X, which doesn't really roll off the tongue.
It's a straight edge box.
Why are they so bad at naming things, guys?
I think everyone's bad at naming things, to be honest. Like, all the systems have just weird names.
But I did hear...
They've, like, left any pattern as well. Like, they just... It just seems like they just throw... It's like the Xbox, the 360, the One, the One S, the One X. Like, it's just... Everything's just all over the place, it feels like.
Yeah, the best one I heard was... And I thought this would have been true, is I thought it would have been the Xbox One Elite. And that way it would have lined up with the controller of the same name.
Sure, sure.
And then they said X, and then it's like, well, okay, there's an Xbox One, there's an S, and now there's an X. But, I mean, right off the bat, like, those two letters sound the same, and I feel like in verbal conversation, it might be easily confused, you know, if you're trying to speak to somebody about it, which
like
I thought
the tag to every Microsoft rolled out product should just be, like, from the makers of the Zune, like, just just the worst name ever. I feel like Surface is maybe that's their passable name, right? Like, that's
I'll tell you what, though.
There's a Zune joke in Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to see that, but there is literally a Zune joke in that
that's
movie.
Perfect.
Yeah.
The tagline for this too is they call it the world's most powerful console.
Yeah.
And that's also slightly funny to me because having a 2-year-old, I watch Finding Dory like every single weekend. And there's a character who is a beluga whale, and he has the most powerful pair of glasses in, like, you know, in his sonar, his brain sonar.
Yes. Yeah.
So every time I hear them say it's the world's most powerful console, I just think of the character from Finding Dory going,
I've seen it a few times myself.
Yeah. Anyways, so that was funny to me too. Anyways, the console is going to be $500. Goes on sale November 7th. I don't think $500 is not like a price you get excited about, but it's also not a price that you get really sad about. It's just kind of a price.
Yeah, I mean, it's under what we were guessing at, right? It was surprising to me. I will say that much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, for what you're getting, I mean, you know, it's a beefy, beefy console. They're not lying when they're saying it's very powerful. It's going to make games look very, very, very pretty for a number of years. So it's, you know, right now the current Xbox One is a little underpowered, especially when up against the PlayStation 4 Pro. And this is going to more than level the playing field. It's, I think they said 40% more powerful overall than the current Xbox One. And of course, able to do, you know, 60 frames per second, 4K, which is just going to look really, really gorgeous if you have a TV, of course, that can play it. So,
yes. And let's see, the other big, well, yeah, and I think they said, you know, things that you might expect, like games should load faster. I did watch one of the daily briefings from Microsoft, and I think part of the reason why that the games will load faster is because they have an upgraded drive inside of the machine that will help that to happen. You know, in the briefing, they talked about this new power management system that's supposed to kind of, like, I don't know, do something technical that somehow makes the whole system work better, because they had some new patent for it, named it after the person that created it. And otherwise, it's fairly similar as far as the ports go on the back of the unit. Somehow, this is the smallest Xbox unit that they've made.
I was afraid when they announced,
is there a power brick again?
I don't think so. I think that the power is still built into the unit because there's just a plug on the back.
Which is
surprising. So hopefully that remains to be true. The other non-gaming announcement that they made at the end of the show was that they're going to start making OG Xbox games backwards compatible for you to play on your Xbox One system. And I'm thinking those are going to be disc-based, at least to start.
I can't think of an original Xbox game off the top of my head.
That's the whole thing. They just actually released statistics a couple weeks ago that are saying, like, people pissed and moaned about backwards compatibility and how they really wanted it to be, how they felt it was all important. But then statistics prove that, like, such an incredibly low percentage of players are actually playing old backwards compatible games.
Oh, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I mean, I feel like Sony and Microsoft have swapped places because originally Microsoft was like, nobody wants to buy discs anymore. And then Sony pounced on that. Mm-hmm. And, now Sony's doing something where they go, nobody wants to do backwards compatibility anymore. And so that just opens the door, from at least a PR, posture.
Right.
Hey, we're going to give you more stuff now. And at a certain point, it doesn't even matter if people use it.
It's just a checkbox, right?
People want to know that it's available to them, right? And so now it is. So
Whether you use it or not,
like, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I think just from a technical standpoint, I thought it was fascinating. They mentioned on a briefing that in their test labs, because the original Xbox, you could do like local LAN parties, and they said that they have games running local LAN party style with OG Xbox, an Xbox 360, and an Xbox One, all running the same game, like all communicating with each other, like on a LAN party, right? So imagine being able to do that with Halo 2, and you bring your Xbox One to your buddy's house, they have Xbox 360, and then somehow those two machines can talk to each other. It's just kind of cool that they just even did that to begin with,
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, this is the feature where I was just like, really? Like, okay, why don't I just plug in my fucking ColecoVision? Like, I don't care about, like, those games. There's a reason. Like, I understand people have nostalgia for old games. And I love my old NES games. I love, Genesis. But like, when you go to, like original Xbox games, like Matt said, I can't think of any that, like, really blew me away. Like,
The one they showed was Crimson Skies, which was like a...
I remember Crimson Skies.
I don't know if it was like a launch title or whatever, but
I think it was.
And then honestly, I think Halo 2 may have been an OG Xbox game.
It was.
And I know there's a couple other ones. I think like Voodoo Vince was an original Xbox game, but they remastered that. But there's probably a generation of people who grew up playing Xbox.
That's true.
Old enough now, so they want their games, right? So
yeah, being
able to. I feel like Xbox's engineering team is just now turned into sort of like mad scientists, and they just sit around and go like, what can we do now? Like, let's try to push this thing harder or make things more compatible.
At the end of the day, it's all VMs, right?
They're basically just running some sort of like connected VM inside that ports Xbox games in.
Right. Mm-hmm. And if you never use it, then it's not going to change your experience on the system.
Oh yeah, I mean, I don't care. It's fine that they did it. It just doesn't. At the same time, I'm just like, I can't. I have so much stuff that's new that I need to play that I can't imagine going back to the original Xbox. But it might just be not for us, like you just said. So it's fine.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. From Microsoft, what else do you want to talk about?
Let's talk really briefly about Crackdown 3, just for about a minute. Crackdown 3, a lot of people have been really hyped for this. I don't know if you guys ever played the original. I played the original quite a bit. It was super fun.
Yeah, I played the first one, but not the second one ever, I don't think.
Yeah, I think I only played the demo for the second one. But the first one is kind of open world destruction madness. I think a lot of games kind of copied the formula of the original Crackdown, where it was like anything goes. I know Saints Row kind of borrowed heavily from kind of the Crackdown, especially Saints Row 4 with like the open world superpowers and stuff.
Right.
Crackdown 3 had Terry Crews promoting it, which was really cool. And it looks like the graphics look pretty slick. It kind of has this cel shaded look. So if you're into kind of open world destruction and sort of madness with vehicles and superpowers and machine guns, then, it looks like November 7th, Crackdown 3 will finally drop and people will get their taste of Crackdown again, which is cool.
Absolutely. And before you get to this last thing on the list, and I'm sure we're all going to talk about this a little bit, I just want to hit some quick points from Microsoft that I wrote down during the conference.
Yeah.
I noticed that they, and they brought this up too, they really focused on the diversity of games they showcased this year at their thing. They said that they were showing about 42 different games during their conference. I did notice that there appeared to be a lot of Japanese style games like in their briefing, which I thought was interesting for Microsoft, because I never really felt like, you know, if you were a Japanese game player, Xbox was probably not your platform of choice. So I thought it was
It failed pretty hard in Japan. So
yeah, but I'm saying, like, if I knew that I was interested in those kinds of RPGs and action games, then I might look to Nintendo or PlayStation, you know, as my primary console. So I just thought it was interesting they brought that up.
Right.
I noticed that, like, just in general, these battle royale games are beginning to get a lot of traction, probably partially because of streaming. But, you know, Microsoft just brought The Culling to console. They also are bringing a PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, which is really like a hot game in the streaming community right now.
Yeah, it's huge right now.
And then they also showed a new game, I think, called like the Darwin Project, which appeared to, again, be the same type of battle arena game where you just kind of, like, it's like Hunger Games, right? And it's just something that's very watchable, I think, for a streaming community. Other games that stood out to me were was a game called Last Night, which looked like a cyberpunk type game. There was a game called Artful Escape, which featured like a lot of brilliant colors, and I think this is the one where there was like a guy playing like a space guitar and like flying around on like dirigibles or something. There was a quick blurb about Tacoma coming out on August 2nd, which is the game from Fulbright, creators of Gone Home. They showed a new platforming game called Super Lucky, which I thought for sure was going to be like a Conker's game because there was something that appeared to be a fox. And then we got a teaser for a Life is Strange prequel, which I think is called Before the Storm, which I believe focuses on the character who goes missing.
Rachel Amber. I heard some bummer stuff about this, unfortunately. Do you want me to tell you the bummer stuff about this?
Is it that Ashley Birch is not going to be in the game?
That's part of it. And okay. Part of it is actually Don't Nod is not making this game.
What?
Yes. Don't Nod is actually making Life is Strange 2 right now. This is a prequel that's being made by another studio. And not only is another studio making this, none of the voice cast is in it because of the SAG-AFTRA strike. So,
OMG. Okay,
yeah,
well.
Yeah, man.
It's we'll
like,
just have to wait and see, I suppose.
It's like a cover band, like playing your favorite band's music. It's just,
it's like,
ouch.
It's like when they replaced the lead singer of Journey with that guy who sounded like him but wasn't him.
Yeah, that's, you know, I'm not too into that. I get it, but I'm not too into it.
Yeah, and then something that we'll probably talk about at some point and has been fairly prominent throughout has been Sea of Thieves showed off some more gameplay mechanics. They did like a little raid on an island, and that game continues to look really interesting and fascinating. So I'm still looking forward to Sea of Thieves.
I'm under NDA, so I can't say how much I love that game.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. somehow I signed up. I sent you guys invites to get into the alpha, and then you both got in and I did not. So yeah.
And they've put the alpha on every day that I am not inside of my house with my Xbox.
Matt's traveling every time they
I'm like home for like 3 weeks in a row and nothing happens, and then I'm like, well, I'm going out next weekend, and they're like, alpha gameplay Saturday, and I'm like, ow, every time.
Yeah,
we'll get in there one day.
I think this week there's
shoot me out of a cannon.
I think there's stuff going on.
Anyways, that we're allowed to talk about it.
No. Sorry, Scott. So we'd love to tell you, but
no, fair enough.
We can't tell you how much we like the game.
I mean, you can't talk about it, but I can certainly go watch 30 minutes of gameplay on YouTube and make my own decisions. So.
Yeah, there you go.
Are you actually allowed to watch that on YouTube though?
yeah, because they're streaming it. Oh, I watch it on Mixer, of course.
Ah, yes.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, so let's talk
about
Anthem.
Anthem.
Yes. Okay.
I think I'm more hyped about this than you guys are.
Yeah.
I love flying in games. and I feel like the flight in this game looks like so much fun. So for those of you who did not watch the Microsoft presser or haven't been paying attention to games for the past couple weeks, and we do have listeners that are like that, so There's a new BioWare game on the horizon called Anthem, which is a brand new IP. This is the IP that's been in development for quite some time. It has a lot of the talent behind it from the original Mass Effect trilogy. So a lot of the guys who made the original Mass Effect trilogy are now working on Anthem. And a lot of, you know, other folks from various other studios actually worked in Andromeda. So this has a lot of the OG Mass Effect guys. It appears to be a dystopian world that is not Earth, where humans are living inside a large walled-off city, sort of similar in a lot of ways to the plot of Destiny. And outside of the city walls, there's this kind of Jurassic Park-y sort of wildland-type place with monsters and creatures and sort of a evil indigenous species running around. And you and your pals can fly around in upgradable mech suits and battle them. And
They call them javelins, Ash.
Javelins. I'm sorry, javelins. They're not mech suits. Yeah,
and they're certainly not titans that fall from the sky.
No,
but they do fly. The yes.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
They're not quite as titanic as titans, but
right.
But yeah, you know, from what I hear, and this will make Matt happy, is that there is a full long BioWare style campaign that you can play completely by yourself. They do have elements.
This is me conjecturing to the yes. wild blue sky. But it's going to be the same thing that there's a full long campaign you can play by yourself in Mass Effect. It's just buried in an open world that you have to like search through to figure out what the narrative is. It's not a guided narrative experience. Now, maybe I'm wrong and maybe it's an Anthem and I'll happily play it and I'll likely buy it regardless. but it's just, yeah, keep talking about this.
It's interesting you say that because I thought I have a slightly different reason for being hesitant with this game, and it's not because of that, but it's more because of just the time investment of like the way these games are going. Yeah. You know, right now, because like I saw this and I was like, well, you know, this might be like The Division in the sense where like, yes, I can play it by myself and that's fine, and you know, at some points I'll do that, but because the game is so large, there's an investment that needs to be made. A time investment, like a mental investment that needs to be made into these super large games. And it's just really hard to do, you know, at this point, given the amount of time that is available to play games. And so, I just hope that I will be able to jump in for like 2 or 3 hours at a time and still get something out of it and not feel like I need to, you know, like I've tried to play Witcher 3 like 2 times and I just can't do it. You know, because I know how big it is, and I've never gone back to Destiny to play any of those expansions, and I mean to The Division or Destiny for that matter, and I just worry that you know, I do love BioWare, and I will get this game, and I just hope that I will be able to experience it. So yeah, that's why I'm hesitant.
Sort of what I was like speaking around, I guess, which is that I don't dedicate 6 hours of gameplay to a game. I haven't sat and played a game for 6+ hours in I can't even tell you how long. And when I bounce in and out of games, it's usually with like days, sometimes week long gaps in between playing, if not a couple weeks, depending on what my schedule is that time. So it's like when a game isn't linear, or when a game doesn't have a narrative that's driving it, it makes it so hard to jump in and out of those games. You get so lost in where you were, what you're doing, what's going on right now. You have to like kind of like hint back through stuff. Like it's just frustrating for me. And I was going to say, like, this isn't a problem with Anthem. This is a problem with the industry at large right now. This is where like every AAA game is going, is open world giant with like a narrative in it. Sure. But you know, 150 hours of gameplay outside of that narrative. And you're like, well, then that means the narrative is in it, but it's going to be buried around open world side quests, and it's not a narrative in the sense that you can like, you're going to be bouncing around and doing whatever you want when you're playing. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's a brilliant style of play for some people. It's just for me, I'm getting lost again. You know, it's like,
I think this will be a theme throughout our E3 discussion.
Yeah. That's so what I was going to say. Yeah. There's only like
almost every AAA game except for Wolfenstein, I think is, right. is going to be
Which
open
is why
world.
I'm saying it's not a problem with Anthem. It's not, this isn't an You're issue right. that BioWare has. BioWare is feasibly going to do it better than a lot of people too. Like they're very good at, it's nice to know they've got a new IP. I'm very happy that it's new, you know, like, that kind of stuff I think is all really cool, and it's gorgeous as shit. Like I watched the trailer and I just was like, good lord, like the stuff they're making now, not just BioWare, but this game included, is crazy looking. It just, I look at it and I go, God, I just don't have it. It's not in me to do this. So we'll see. Like you said, if there's a narrative inside of it, I might get really excited and maybe I can just play that through. But I just worry that you could say that same line about probably any number of these open world games, that there is a narrative inside of it. Like Assassin's Creed has a narrative inside of it. It's just, you know, like, good luck keeping stream on it the whole time. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Anyways, I think it looks really cool. I agree, flying is awesome. I think the mech suits look cool. While yes, they are pulling pretty clearly from some other things, I have faith in the fact that BioWare tends to make really interesting, unique experiences. So, you know, hopefully they're able to do that. You could say the same like Dragon Age. You could be like, oh well, there's a million D&D games, but clearly they hit something out of the park there. So
yeah, I don't see any problem with what I saw so far. I mean, you know, the whole dystopian world, like everything falling apart in mech suits has been done time and time again, but I think it just depends on the twist that they end up throwing in there.
Yeah.
So
yeah, yep.
And well, it's BioWare, cool. So you gotta give them a little credit, you know. Yeah.
I think it'll be good. I'm excited. Let's talk quickly about Sony. The only thing that Sony that really made me like poo my pants was Spider-Man. Did you guys watch the Spider-Man demo at all?
But everybody's been telling me how crazy it looks.
Holy cow. So this is Spider-Man is by Insomniac, and I am like more excited for it. It's weird because we've gotten to this place where like licensed games are kind of good again. Like yeah. There was a time when they were like absolutely awful, but now it's like, now developers are getting a hold of these licenses and making really great licensed games. And this Spider-Man game is like one of the most gorgeous looking thing. It's going to do for Spider-Man what the Arkham games did for Batman, without a doubt. It is partially open world, it looks like, but at the same time, it's the same kind of open world that Batman is. It's more of like a sandbox to play in as Spider-Man, right. And you're able to navigate the city and run up buildings and sling webs, and just looks like you have really, really creative ways to use your powers and to use your spider sense. You know, all sorts of different moves you can do, and voice acting looks top notch. The cinematic quality of the combat is just really next level stuff. I mean, it's just really, really like, I think the demo that they showed off is about 8 minutes. And it shows, you know, average combat. And then it shows an action sequence with some quick time events, but holy moly, like this game just looks unbelievable.
Yeah.
So yeah,
I'm super excited until I heard Insomniac was attached to it. And then I was like, oh yeah. Okay, cool. Like I'm in
Sunset Overdrive. Good. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
I did not watch this press event, and I guess, you know, last year Sony did the whole like kind of theater experience for their presser, and that motivated a lot of people. You know, Sony fans were very motivated by that, but I feel like last year they showed off a lot of games that were like not even on the horizon to be launched, and then that was still exciting for people.
Right.
This year it looks like, I mean, what I've seen is it looks like they did something similar to what they did last year. You know, depending on who you follow on social media, some people really enjoyed that second time around. Others were sort of left wanting a little bit more. Personally, I did see that there was some more buzz about Detroit Become Human, I think is the game, right?
Yes.
Almost
yeah,
Human,
yeah.
Beyond Human, something like that. Something that I like, right? For me personally, the thing that might make me get a PlayStation 4 is a Quantic Dream game. Sure. And then at that point I'll go and play Spider-Man and Uncharted 4 and, you know, Horizon Zero Dawn or whatever. So, that was the thing that got me excited from their briefing. So, did you see anything else that you enjoyed, Ash?
Yeah. I mean, the new God of War does look spectacular. I actually used to work with a couple of the guys that are working on that game now, and it's really cool to see them, you know, working on such a high profile, awesome project. Mm-hmm. I do enjoy God of War, but, I'm not the hugest fan of God of War just because I wasn't a Sony guy for a long time. I was a Microsoft guy, and it's always been a Sony joint. And also, God of War 1 has the most frustrating sequence in video games of all time. If you play to the end of that game and you have to climb out of hell on the barbed wire spiked pole, it is the most frustrating damn thing I've ever done. But God of War does look absolutely fantastic. I'm interested in seeing where that goes. And, you know, I am kind of interested in Destiny 2. I don't think I'll necessarily pick it up on PlayStation, but I think Destiny 2 does have a lot of potential if they are, you know, if it is going to have a strong narrative like they're claiming it is. That was the one big qualm that a lot of players had, was how flimsy the narrative was in the original Destiny. And they appear to have taken everyone's advice and have really made the story a big part of what's important this time around. So
let's bring this back to Anthem again, right? And I feel like thematically something that I perceived in these briefings is that it appears as if EA has sort of aligned themselves somewhat with Microsoft, right? Because I don't know, I just kind of got that vibe when I was watching both press conferences back to back.
Right.
It clearly seems as if you know, Activision has, you know, aligned themselves with PlayStation as far as Destiny 2 goes, right? That's an Activision game now, right?
Mm.
Yeah. So I guess for me, you know, being a BioWare fan and an Xbox fan, like if I had to choose between Anthem and Destiny 2, I think I might just wait for Anthem and work on my backlog, you know, while waiting for that game to come out, you know, next year. So,
right. I mean, you know, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Destiny promised a lot of things and, you know, notoriously did not deliver on a lot of those things, chiefly being story, right? Like a lot of people were hoping for a lot more and didn't get it. So,
I mean, we certainly had fun with that game. I really enjoyed playing with you guys, and we did the raid, and, you know, the boss fights were fun and the class system, and, you know, there's DLC we never played, but,
like I dare not complain about a game that I spent $60 on and played for 50 hours. Like I would be a total piece of garbage if I was like, and that game was shit. It's like, no, I paid $50 and I got 50 hours of entertainment out of it. Like
I even had fun in the, competitive multiplayer in that game for a time. And then people got like really good and got like a little too serious. And I'm hoping that when, you know, all those hardcore players move to Destiny 2, like I can be in like the easy, in the kiddie pool of Destiny 1 and try to finish that up, you know.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Is that anything else from Sony?
I mean, you know, they showed off some Call of Duty World War II stuff. And really briefly, I'm excited that it's going back to World War II just because I like the time period in games. And if I hear that the narrative is good in that, I might pick it up. So
yeah,
fair enough. You want to talk about Nintendo? That's next on your list.
This is all for you, buddy.
Yeah, well, I mean, I watched, I did scan the Nintendo briefing. You know, I enjoy Metroid Prime. I'm not like a super fan, but I know it's important to have that game, you know, back on deck. So that's good. I think really, you know, I like I said, I wasn't too crazy about Breath of the Wild. It looks like they're getting, you know, they announced what the two DLC packages are. They do appear to be, you know, more like end game content with like a hard mode and things of that nature. It was hard to tell what the second expansion pass was, if it was like quote unquote story related, because not like a really super like deep narrative of Breath of the Wild. But I couldn't tell if it was like in of that vein or if it was like a different gameplay mode or what it was exactly. But it certainly looks to expand upon the formula that was very successful for them. So,
right.
You know, maybe someday I'll go back to that, but it just, you know, this game really didn't resonate with me the same way it did with other people. I think that the thing that really caught a lot of people by surprise was the extended trailer for Super Mario Odyssey. I don't know if you guys, did you see this one?
Yeah, it looks very different.
Yeah. And I commented to someone on Twitter that I, you know, when I played Super Mario Brothers Wii U version, which is the 2D version of the game, and I did a post play survey for Nintendo, and I basically wrote like uninspired level design because it was like more of the same, you know. And so now you look at Super Mario Odyssey and you see Mario going to like a city that looks like New York, and then some kind of, you know, city inspired by Mexico, and then another, you know, fantastical realm, and it looked like so much crazy eye candy.
It looks awesome, to be honest. It looks insane.
It really does. There's like this gameplay mechanic where Mario's hat is like possessed somehow, and he is able to use it as a weapon. He can throw it at different creatures within the in the game and kind of possess those creatures. And so, you know, at one point he possesses like a T-Rex, and you become the T-Rex, you know, and you can control it. You know, he's possessing like bullet bills and people in New Donk City, I think is what the what the New York City was called. And it just looks like completely bonkers. It almost doesn't look like a Mario game. It almost looks like something as crazy as that game was from Platinum that came out that I always said was really good. The Wonderful 101. It kind of looked like crazy.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that, you know, if you were on the fence about this game, I think this really persuaded a lot of people over to the other side. So go check out the trailer. Even if you're not a huge Mario fan, I think it's worth watching, because I think it was probably one of the most surprising things of E3 so far. And I think that's, I mean, for me, for Nintendo, that's pretty much it, because I'm kind of like, I'm out on the Switch until further notice.
Will this be, I have a question though. So like they also teased a Metroid coming to the Switch and a Pokemon coming to the Switch, right?
Uh-huh. Which people will lose their mind for if there's a Pokemon coming to Switch.
Is this the first time since what, like the Super Nintendo, that a Metroid, Pokemon, Mario, and Zelda will all be out on the same platform?
True. I mean, and they also released, they also announced a new Kirby adventure and a new Yoshi adventure.
But like they haven't had this in forever, right? I mean, like,
and this is why this thing's gonna sell so many damn units. So this is what we said. This is what we said years ago. Like, new Nintendo console just has to have a shitload of original Nintendo games, and then it'll do fine. And it looks like we're getting them.
We would be remiss to not mention Scott's fire tweet today about, I think Amazon Games or something was like, "What do you want to see in the new Nintendo Switch?" And Scott replied back and just said, "Inventory."
Yeah,
beautiful.
Like, I'm like, and I'm being serious. Like, I feel like Amazon Games Twitter account was like way off the mark today. You know, because they were like, "What do you want to see?" And I was like, "That I can buy one."
Yeah,
and
that it's available and then, currently.
And then you know, a few hours later, they tweeted like a poll, who won E3 this year? And then they listed like the companies, right?
Yeah.
And and like that line of thinking is so toxic for the gaming community. Just that, you know, that a brand would bring that up in conversation, I think is really awful. And so I just replied back and I was like, consumers won, because
You're right. You're right. You know? I've always been very anti who won E3 or who won this or who won that, because you're right. It is toxic, and it's they shouldn't be against each other. Right. That's something that's just kind of drummed up by the media to get clicks. And you know, in the end, as ridiculous as it sounds to some people, it's all about the art. It's all about the creative content. It's all about making people happy with something that hundreds of people toil away at. And it's not about who wins or who loses an event like this. I think that's stupid, and you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
But you probably ended up made some kid that worked for Amazon, like a 20-year-old social media kid, cry. He's like, fine, you
this
mean
guy,
old
Scott,
man.
Keeps beating up on me.
Well, I mean, thankfully, I went and read the replies to that poll, and I'm like, I'm not alone. You know, like there are people out there that kind of recognize now that like this whole, you know, quote unquote, console PC war thing is all just, you know, drummed up nonsense, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, you get people going like, oh, Call of Duty, World War II, rip Microsoft, man, it's over.
Yeah,
like,
just
calm down, man. Like,
well, you know, they're gonna run out of those billions upon billions of dollars and the whole thing's over.
And these are the people that are gonna like tweet about this, you know, ad nauseum until what are they going to do? They're going to turn around and fire up their PC and play Overwatch until next Christmas, right? And it's like, well,
yeah, people who play Overwatch are stupid.
No, I'm just, but my point is that all these people come out of the woodwork with all these fiery opinions about all these games, and then they just go back to the two or three games they play all the time, and then, you know, they never pick up whatever it is. You know, they're not going to pick up Metroid Prime 4 or whatever.
Yeah. I was just trying to call Ash stupid. That was all that was.
I know.
It's all good. I got it.
Yeah. Anyways.
I got someone threatened to murder me last night. I'm used to stuff like this.
Let's talk about Bethesda.
Bethesda. So
I feel like we're going to have to circle back to what Ash just said. So just keep going.
No. It was during Overwatch. Someone wanted to kill me.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I'm sleepy.
Biggest thing, I think, on this list that made me incredibly happy was the new Wolfenstein 2.
Yeah.
What's the name of it? It's the new Colossus is the name of it.
More Nazis. Oh, the new Colossus.
Yeah, the new Colossus. So this is what Matt has been waiting for, which is a linear narrative shooter experience, not open world. But, you know, it looks to be a lot of the things that we really loved about Wolfenstein The New Order, which is a really wonderfully done narrative with great voice acting and a great cast, a lot of emotion and really great mechanics, you know, and probably a linear experience that's between 6 to 10 hours. And that's that. And I'm fine with that. You know, if you have a great adventure that's 6 to 10 hours long. And it's as memorable as a New Order, then by all means, give me that. You know?
Also,
and
me playing, so it'll actually be 10 to 20 hours long, because I'm terrible at these games, but still love them.
Well,
they know, too. I mean, the dev hit the nail on the head. They know what game they're making, right? He came out and he goes, you know, memorable characters, like, you know, solid storyline, great gameplay mechanics, and that's it. You know, it's not like a wild open world with a crafting system. It's like, no, it's like, here's your gun. Go kill these people.
Right.
You know, these characters are your friends. There's like a pregnant woman. She's beating people over the head. There's a guy tripping on acid. Like, it's just crazy pants. Crazy pants times.
Not to beleaguer this point, but like the thing that's great about Wolfenstein 2 and the thing that I don't feel like I'm literally being left behind with like the open world gaming, because I know what will happen. I'm old enough to have a long enough view on this to say, the shit will circle back around again. Like, stuff will shift around. We'll have open world games for sure, but some developer will come up with some absolutely unique way to play a new game, and that'll be the new hot shit that everybody starts ripping off and doing. So,
yes,
it's like, it's fine. I'm not really worried about it. It just makes me excited that like these games like Wolfenstein 2 come out, and I can dedicate time to them and play them and enjoy them. So,
cool. Absolutely,
I'm good. I do
have some impressions about Bethesda's conference overall. I thought that their approach to doing like this Bethesda Land thing was really a good idea in terms of like, cause they, you know, like on paper, it's not like they really announced a lot of new games that they had, but instead they basically like said, we have a body of really great IP and here's what's happening in each one, you know?
Right.
So they can say
they showcased all of their cool things.
Hey, we still have Fallout 4 and Skyrim, and now we're like creating a formal community for like mods that are guaranteed to work, you know? Yeah. So like that was like, I thought that their approach to doing that was really well thought out. I did think it was bizarre that the conference opened up with like, you know, interviews with like children of the employees of Bethesda. Although, you know, the press briefing started at midnight on the East Coast, which was
that's true.
It's kind of weird. And then My only other note is that like I almost implore Bethesda at this point to make a game that's based on humor, because if you look at their body of games, it's all like dystopian worlds, like derelict, you know, spaceships and like nuclear destroyed environments, or, you know, a dark world where an assassin, you know, runs around stealthily and dispatches people. And
they do have a certain tone at this point. I mean, there's Dishonored, Evil Within, Fallout, Wolfenstein,
Doom, Quake.
Yeah, Doom. Yeah. It's true.
And it's like, I just feel like it's not like sad, but all the worlds are like, it's like they're living in the darkest timeline. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
And I would just love to see them, you know, have an attempt at like a kind of like a bright and shiny game that's not so dark and like ominous, you know.
But that being said, everything they did show looked really cool. Like Evil Within 2 looks really great. You know, obviously there's VR stuff that I probably won't ever touch, but Fallout 4 VR, Doom VR looks, or Doom VFR, which is supposed to be a crazy new thing.
It looks cool.
Yeah, it does look cool. And
I'm still holding out for Wet 2.
Wetter.
Wet Eliza Dushku
with Dushku, yeah. So anyway, yeah, Bethesda put out some cool stuff. You know, that Wolfenstein 2, just that footage just looks spectacular. So yeah, I'm really excited.
I like that Bethesda is like in this console space now, but they really have like the heart of like a PC gamer, you know.
Yeah, like, I can
with,
see
like,
that
mod support and all this. So there's like Quake Arena, you know, Quake Champions and stuff like that. So
mm-hmm.
Good for them. It's good stuff.
Well, let's jump on over to Ubisoft. I guess, you know, there are a number of trailers and some gameplay footage of Far Cry 5. I'm a Far Cry fan. I don't know if I'll be picking this one up just because, you know, again, I too am experiencing a little bit of open world fatigue, just because I don't have the amount of time that I used to have to play games. So it's hard for me to, get the most out of these open world experiences, but, Far Cry 5 is looking really, really fun. It does look like they are kind of going for a more comedic, I don't want to say slapsticky, but you know, it has a more of a Troma-esque vibe to it, with just very you know, kind of off the wall characters, and it takes place in Montana now, and instead of fighting, you know, terrorists or you know, zealots, you're fighting against this religious cult in the heart of Montana. So I guess they're supposed to be Christian extremists.
I feel like if Bethesda like is living in a timeline of like dystopian worlds, like I feel like Ubisoft is truly like in the, they take like normal worlds and then they put those worlds in the darkest timelines, you know?
Like,
imagine if Bolivia was super sad. Imagine if Montana was super sad.
It's Montana, but all the roads are blocked off and this cult has taken over and is just murdering people in the streets. You're like, would that really fly in Montana?
Yeah.
Like I've been there several times. It's a pretty normal place.
Yeah. It's almost as if like they are in France and they have this like impression of what Americans are like, you know? You know, like they announced Cars 2 and it's like, we know that the Americans really like their motorized vehicles. So this time in Cars 2, we will allow you to use them all, you know, maximum speed and power. And you're like, okay, well, you know, we also like music and kind of like normal stuff too. It's not just like cars and jet skis, but we get it. It's cool, you know. Like you think we're all like, we're just doing like hot dog eating contests and you know, doing backflips in our wave runners, but that's okay, you know. Like I still like their games. It's just like,
you know what's true things. I have participated in a hot dog eating contest and I have done a backflip off of a wave runner before. Perfect.
Well, there you go. I mean,
America.
It's your fault that Ubisoft's games are the way they are.
I think it is. It's definitely my fault. The big announcement that they saved for the very end was the announcement of Beyond Good and Evil 2, the fact that it exists, and they actually showed footage of the game. I never played the original. I'm like one of those a-holes.
But is this Beyond Good and Evil 2? Like, this is not what I remember the original game being.
You played it, right, Scott? Like
on the GameCube. I remember this game being a little more family friendly.
Yeah.
Like I heard like 10 fucks in the first 2 minutes of the cinematic. And like in the original game you played as Jade and her two primary gameplay mechanics were a staff and a camera that she used to take pictures of different animals and other things in the environment, and then all of a sudden it's like and now it feels like they're doing kind of like a No Man's Sky thing where you can, you know, travel all of the unknown galaxies and visit distant worlds. And it's like, okay, but that's not what Beyond Good and Evil was, you know?
Yeah, it's supposedly a prequel to the original game with like all brand new mechanics and supposedly, you know, taking place in the same universe as Beyond Good and Evil. But you're right, in terms of mechanics and how the game is played, it's a completely different animal.
Yeah, I mean, if memory serves me correctly, like the theme is there where it's like, there are these mega corporations that are kind of like enslaving people and you are trying to liberate like resources or the environment from these corporations. I think that was kind of like what was going on in the first game story wise. But, you know, the gameplay mechanics were more kind of like light melee based with some like kind of puzzly platforming things and a little bit of like vehicle exploration. That's kind of what the gist of the first game was, and definitely something that you could like play for everyone. And then this game again has sort of a like a darkest timeline kind of vibe to it, but hopefully I would hope that it's a little more, you know, more kind of jokey in the style of like a Firefly game where it's like this crew on a spaceship and you're going on adventures and stuff like that. So we'll just have to wait and see. I feel like there's not really enough to go on at this point other than the cinematic.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it could be great. Unfortunately, I never really played through the original, so I don't have the same nostalgia that a lot of other players have. So when people lost their collective minds over this being announced, I was like, I don't remember this.
Yeah.
I think I was playing Warcraft when this game came out. It's all a blur.
Yeah. I mean, we also saw some more gameplay from the Fractured But Whole.
Yeah. Yes.
South Park game looks pretty good. Looks like it's coming along well. There was a
phone
demo
game too, didn't they?
Yeah, they did announce a phone game called Phone Destroyer, which I thought was kind of like on the nose.
It's hilarious because it's just probably eats batteries.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it looks like it's a kind of like a card, card type system, fighting game with cards, and it'll be all tongue in cheek, and they'll be like microtransactions. You buy something already,
Yeah,
Of course.
I'll try it, and then new Assassin's Creed has been floating around E3 again. It looks like it's going to like a much more kind of like disjointed narrative where the world is larger than before. I noticed that.
Is it just going to be like Assassin's Creed Earth? Around Earth and kill things.
I mean, like, I think the fear is that like these games are leaning more into like a sandbox aspect.
Yeah.
And like kind of getting away from a narrative. And, I know that people do enjoy sandbox games because it's just kind of like you do whatever you want. And it's fun for streaming. But, I think that there are other people, like ourselves who do enjoy playing the game that has been created by the writer. Right. Yeah. And not necessarily the one that we invent in our minds,
right,
I don't want to invent my own story. I want to experience your story, like the developer's story.
Yeah.
But I noticed that there's like no mini map in the Assassin's Creed UI, at least in the gameplay I saw. It was kind of more of like a heads up display with like nearby icons of things that were close to you. So
interesting.
I know that they continue to say like we had to rethink, how this whole game was put together, but I have yet to hear specifically how the game has been reimagined. So
the dead
I look forward
to disappear now. You
follow
a trail of dead people everywhere.
I look forward to more information on this topic. So.
The other big one that I actually thought was my standout was actually Skull and Bones.
Really?
Which was, yeah. I was a huge fan of Black Flag's naval combat, and so this is done by a lot of people that did that naval combat, and it's a straight up pirate naval combat game.
But you know what I think this is though? I think this is For Honor Pirate Edition. I think it's competitive with like seasons and online like ranked play.
Well, I think we need to be careful with everyone's using seasons differently, and that's because seasons has become the new buzzword, I think, this year, because Overwatch is doing seasons and a lot of other games are doing seasons, and traditionally I think it is a competitive thing, but I think now people are using seasons to kind of note new content releases, right? And it's
I don't think this game has a campaign. I think it's like Rainbow Six Siege or For Honor, like in the sense where it's like it's meant to be played competitively. Like, did you get a different vibe?
I don't know if it has. To be perfectly honest, the demo that I watched was just combat, right? But they had missions that you could kind of go on with friends together. So it may be strictly a competitive type thing with a loosely woven narrative. I just felt that the combat in Black Flag was great, and I could definitely stand to do more of it in games. So I don't necessarily need a narrative in a pirate ship simulator game like that. If it's priced correctly and there's enough content there and enough cool stuff to unlock, I don't really necessarily need a story to go along with it. But I see what you're saying. But back to the seasons thing, I think a lot of these games have talked about seasons, and we're going to talk about Battlefront 2 in a few minutes, and that's another game that's talking about having seasons of content. But also one thing I noticed is that people are talking about seasons of content, those seasons being free, and also no one talked about season passes this year.
You're right.
And I think, I tweeted out the very first EA press conference. I honestly think the season pass is dead because I think it wasn't working and people were getting ripped off.
Ubisoft is still doing that with, like Assassin's Creed is still going to have two expansions with their gold edition version of the game. But you're right. I mean, they definitely made it a huge point in the EA presser that we'll talk about in a little bit that, all of the content will be free. And that's kind of what they did with what they're doing with Titanfall 2 currently as well. They just continue to roll out stuff for multiplayer, and it's all, to my knowledge, is all available for everyone to play.
Right, right.
Let's see. For Ubisoft, did you catch the beginning with the Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle?
I did. I mean, not, you know, you are well aware Mario is not necessarily my thing.
Yeah.
So I kind of just, like, you know, had 10 things open while this was playing, but it looks cool if this is what you're into.
The only thing I want to say is that I think this title will be secretly very good, and it will be, I mean, it'll be limited to the Switch, but it is a turn-based strategy game.
Yeah, it's crazy. People said it's like kind of XCOM with XCOM with Mario.
And I feel like it kind of almost scratches an itch that would, like, it kind of almost fills a void that was left by, you know, the Square Enix Mario RPG and the Seven Stars or whatever, that was like kind of like a cult classic at this point on Super Nintendo. But it's nice to see, you know, and then that's kind of been replaced by like the Paper Mario series. But it's nice to see a Mario game go in a different direction. And even if this was not a Mario game, I think this game is still going to be really good. And I think it's one worth keeping an eye on as it comes closer. And, you know, just a quick note on the programming for this event. It was really kind of sweet to see, at the beginning of the conference, they brought, you know, Miyamoto on stage to help announce the game with the CEO of Ubisoft. And then they cut to, you know, one of the main devs on the game was sitting in the audience, basically receiving praise from Miyamoto. And the guy's like tearing up because it's probably his childhood dream to now be able to work on this game, and then to kind of like get some sort of praise from one of your icons
who's on
stage, like helping to promote your game. I thought that was a very touching moment for that person on the team. So I thought that was really cool too. I also thought it was nice that their press briefing ended with him bringing all of the developers up on stage and kind of giving like a short speech about, like, you know, games are for everybody, and like, we'll continue to make them, and we appreciate you, because as you know, Ubisoft has been kind of like trying to fight off hostile takeover from Vivendi, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ubisoft is a family owned company, and I think that, you know, it might be a little sad to see that, you know, being scooped up by a media conglomerate, but I don't know, maybe that there's some kind of hope in a partnership between Ubisoft and Nintendo that they could fight some of that off. Maybe. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
I feel like there's some subtext there to their press briefing that may not be obvious to everyone that watched it. So I think that's
They've taken some lumps in the past couple of years too. Like, you know, For Honor didn't perform as well as they were hoping. It had a lot of drop off. Division, same thing happened. There was a lot of drop off, even though it sold very well. I think it ended up leaving people with a bad taste in their mouth. Over time, because of the end game. And, I them skipping a year for Assassin's Creed, I think a lot of these things for them, I think 2016 and coming into 2017, it was a hard year for Ubisoft. So hopefully this year will be better for them.
Yeah, and they even came out and promoted Steep, which I didn't know was, like, I didn't think that game was doing super well, but it looks like they're going to be partnering with for the Winter Olympics. So it's kind of interesting that they're kind of bringing that content into an already existing game.
That's cool.
Yeah, so that's kind of a cool thing too. I've always wanted to play Steep, but again, it's just one of those things where there's just not any time, right? But but there you have it. Should we quickly talk about EA?
Yeah, so I actually plucked a couple things off this list because
there are a couple things not on your list, so if you don't mind saving Star Wars for the end.
Sure.
Because the thing that I don't see on your list is A Way Out. Did you see the trailer for this game?
I did, absolutely. It looks pretty awesome.
I mean, come on, man. Like, so this game is from the developers behind Brother, A Tale of Two Sons, which is like, man, if you want to cry your eyes out while playing like a pretty decent like a co-op narrative game, like that's a good game to play. But they go in sort of a different, I mean, obviously co-op was a big part of that game. I don't know if you actually played that game in co-op, but there were two brothers that you controlled throughout the game, and it kind of led to some very interesting gameplay dynamics. But in A Way Out, you play as two individuals who are trying to like break out of a jail.
And it's couch co-op only.
I think you can do both.
Can you do both?
Yeah, but I think the guy said like the game was meant to be experienced in couch co-op, because they do interesting things where they resize the split screen depending on like whose action is more prominent at any point in the game. But they want you to sort of be able to digest what your partner is doing while you're off doing something else. So they show sequences of which you're, you know, one character might be participating in a cutscene while you're meanwhile like doing something like sneaking around trying to like line up the next part of your antics to unleash like within the prison, you know. So I mean, there's a lot of buzz on this game that it might kind of like redesign, you know, like what the co-op game could be. For me, it had a lot of like Kane and Lynch kind of vibes too, where it's like these two kind of like broken individuals trying to just like make something work, you know. So I feel like there might be some darkness to this game too, and I'm just really excited for it.
No, I do think it looks fantastic, and unfortunately I can't remember the dev's name that came up on stage and was talking, but he was one of the most enthusiastic guys ever, and I absolutely loved his energy, because, you know,
he's stoked for the game, for his own game.
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of these guys come on read from the teleprompter and look terrified, and you know, granted, it's a pretty rough thing to do, but it was nice to see some genuine like love and enthusiasm on stage and some energy, you know, like he was just very, very excited about the game. And I do love the idea of either sitting down with a friend or, you know, getting online with a friend and playing through a big cohesive story together, you know, and that would just be fantastic. Like a lot of these games that multiplayer co-op games, it's all about, you know, shooting stuff or fending off waves of something, but actually like working together to solve puzzles in a story together would, I think, would be really, really fun. So I think this is going to be great.
Yeah. It's Hazelight Studios, is the developer, and, you're right. I think it's like a slower moving game in the way that you would, you know, like in the way that you would play a game like Life is Strange, where you're not trying to rush around, but you're really just trying to take it all in. But instead of, you know, doing dialogue based gameplay, you're doing more like environmental manipulation and sneaking around and kind of like trying to solve your way out of the situation, like physically. So
Right.
That's cool. Something else I noticed is, EA announced something quickly called a Seed Research Division. So they're looking at like AI and machine learning and how that can shape the future of games. They kind of breezed over it really quickly, but I thought it was interesting that they even brought it up on stage, that they have like a, you know, they're spinning up a team for like new technologies, like kind of like an agile team. So that was cool. And I also noticed that they relied very heavily on streamers this year. And I kind of wanted to just kind of get your thoughts on what you thought about that approach for the presser.
You know, it's interesting because I have sort of like a love hate. I have a love and hate feelings for the whole idea of influencers in general. I think it's really cool that like people can show their love and enthusiasm for games, but I hate when studios and stuff take advantage of them and buy them whenever it's like, sure, whenever it's not authentic. That's what bothers me. Right.
And some of those personalities were, I thought, good on screen, and some were not as good in my opinion.
Right. Exactly. So, I mean, it's interesting. Like, I don't really know how to answer that, because it's sort of like, it's like, I have such mixed emotions about it. I think when streamers and content creators and influencers are truly in love with an IP or a game or what have you, and they're being themselves, that's great. But if they are getting a paycheck and playing something for X amount of hours, I don't like that. I think that, you know, that it's basically, it's a commercial, and then I don't like commercials. So why would I like that? So,
yeah. And so to that point, and the last thing I want to say about the events themselves before we talk about Battlefront 2, which is going to be exciting, is I don't know at this point what an E3 press briefing is supposed to be anymore, because I've watched like five of these, and I don't know that any one of them really like would have persuaded somebody who was not a fan already like to become a fan or like a super fan. Mm-hmm. And I think in the past people have been like, I just want to hear about games. And then people come out and only talk about games. And I'm like, well, I kind of wanted to hear about some other stuff too, you know. And then Ubisoft brings people out to dance on stage. And then Microsoft puts a car on stage. And then, you know, Sony has people playing instruments on stage. And it's like, I don't even know anymore what I want this to be, how it's supposed to go. Like, is it supposed to be live or pre-taped like Nintendo? Like, it's weird now.
It is. I mean, it's, you know, the end goal is to sell people stuff. But, you know, in a lot of ways, I think it should more be, it should be about more, I can't speak anymore. It should be about celebrating the creative process, right? Showing off like Ubisoft did, showing off the devs that made something truly spectacular. And in the end, you know, maybe selling you something in the end. But, you know, I don't know what these pressers are supposed to be anymore. They're definitely changing. I think they're changing for the better. I don't think they were as unbearable as they have been in the past. Like, I think Microsoft was actually pretty fun from beginning to end because they had very little talking and just showed a bunch of trailers, you know?
Yeah, it's just like, but I mean, the counterpoint to that is like, you could just, they could just release all the trailers on YouTube and you could watch them.
Right.
You know? And it's like, well, you know, but that's not exciting. So like, people want to be entertained. They want to be informed. They want to feel good about the brands that they like. Maybe they want to be surprised by new games. Here's something they like about the games they're already playing. It's like, I don't know how you even get this right anymore. And I don't know what my point is, but I just think it's interesting where we are right now, because I wasn't really blown away by any of the ones I saw, but I feel like I got the information that I needed to make decisions.
Right.
So it's like, well, I wasn't necessarily entertained, but I know what I need to know. So there you have it.
There you have it. Well, let's close things out with a little quick chat about Star Wars Battlefront 2, which was the big thing that EA was plugging this year.
And how about bringing that young lady on stage, the main character whose name I can't remember, but she, I thought, brought a lot of great energy to this presentation.
Yeah, she was awesome. I actually remember her from True Blood, because she was on True Blood for a while. I think she was like a werewolf or something crazy like that. But she was absolutely great. She plays, I want to say, Captain Versio might be her name. Maybe I'm getting that completely wrong, but I'm pulling it from memory. But yeah, you know, I'm really excited about Battlefront 2 for a number of reasons. I do really feel like the narrative is going to be pretty strong. From the short clips that I've seen and from what I've been hearing, it's going to be relatively sizable. And it looks like we are getting a nice little canon story inside the Star Wars universe that takes place over, you know, several decades, which is pretty awesome. We're going to be getting some new tech and some, you know, seeing some new worlds, which is just fantastic. And then they showed off a nice multiplayer. Actually looked to me like it was going to be very fun. So
yeah, but it looks like, I mean, I thought it was great that they owned up to all of the feedback that they got on the game. They even came out on stage. They're like, we got a lot of positive feedback. We got a lot of constructive feedback too. But we listened to you, you know.
Yeah.
We created a deeper class system, more customization for multiplayer. You know, we put in a single player campaign. You know, we added more content overall. They said there's going to be 3 times the content of the first game. You know, battles in space, battles on the ground, you know, more heroes to play with, all 3 eras. An original storyline. I'm going to butcher her name, but it's like Janina Gavankar.
Is the yes. Yeah, that's right.
So I think what I do appreciate about this part of any E3 press briefing is they acknowledge the community. And so maybe that's what I like to see, is like some acknowledgement of like, hey, you know, we're in this together. We're making games for you. We want to make things that you like. We're listening to you, you know? And I feel like that's what they did with Battlefront 2. And it's just the end product appears to be very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes feedback from the community is warranted. I think, like, you know, the mechanics in the original Battlefront were great, but they, you know, everything that it was just missing so many bells and whistles, right?
It was a shallow game.
Right, and you could get to where you wanted to get to in a couple of days, and then you didn't have anywhere else to go. So, you know, the fact that there's so much to do in this one and so much to unlock, and just seeing, you know, the clone troopers facing off against the battle droids, even though it's an era that a lot of people don't like, seeing that, you know, in the Frostbite engine was so cool. And seeing those super battle droids, like, you know, hosing down guys with blaster bolts. And, you know, I'm just like, wow, this is just a really, really fun era to run around in. And it looks like there's, you know, going to be just so much to do. So I'm excited.
Yeah, I mean, even watching, you know, they did an extended gameplay session with some of the, you know, some of the streamers. as part of their briefing. And normally I wouldn't be interested in that, but just watching gameplay of Battlefront 2 was compelling enough to make me stick with it and just kind of go like, wow, this is looks really great and really exciting. Looks like the levels are really well thought out. They showed like an escort mission, kind of like similar to escorting the payload in Overwatch, but they kind of talked about how they designed the maps and how the battles change as you get to different phases of the match, which I thought was pretty cool too.
It is very cool. It is very cool. Well, that we've come to the end. I say we save these Naquados for next week because
that sounds good.
I'm turning into a toad.
That's fine. I'm sure there'll be much more E3 stuff to talk about as the floor show rolls on, and then we'll circle back to that next week.
There's probably many, many games that we missed. Literally hundreds. So
if there's something you want us to talk about, shout at us on Twitter, on social media. We'll go look at those trailers again and we'll discuss it on next week's episode.
Sounds good. Well, thank you guys so much for listening to episode 276 of the Rated NA podcast. As always, you guys can follow us on Twitter, and that's at Nerd Appropriate. You can email us directly just to say hi or to send us pictures of whatever you want. And that's Ash, Scott, or Matt at nerdappropriate.com. You can go to our Instagram page, and that's /nerdappropriate on Instagram. And same with Facebook, /nerdappropriate on Facebook. Say hi to us there. And we will be back next week with an all new show. So thanks again for listening.
Have a good week.
Right, so
yeah, okay, you do it. That's fine.
Wait, on the count of three, just Ash, ready?
Yeah.
One, two, three.
All right.